Hello, listeners. Welcome to the Essentials of Healthy Living on Progressive Talk AM 1260, brought to you by the Village Green Apothecary. I'm Dana Lake, your host for the next hour, reminding you to please tune in every Saturday morning at 10 a.m. My co-host, Kevin Passaro, and I will be alternating the shows dedicated to your health, your diet, your nutrition, lifestyle, and exercise. This show is streamlined through MyVillageGreen.com, and you can go to the website MyVillageGreen.com and listen to the experts. Now, today's topics are going to be many. We'll be talking about everything from pregnancy to the elderly, and we will also address Autism Awareness Month, which is what April is. We'll talk about tree deaths, the wheat and wheat flours, and how you get white flour, how you get whole wheat flour, and we'll talk a lot about that. Also, some bad news about alcohol, a little bit about eyesight and the sun exposure, and we always also mention vitamin D and sun exposure. Stroke risk, some interesting information on that. And falls. We know that the elderly are prone to fall. And what makes people fall more easily as they get older? And this applies to even people who are younger. So we have a lot of information there. And we'll continue on with information on nutrition for your lifestyle. Now let's talk about autism. This is Autism Awareness Month. And I'm very excited to announce that we have a new book out. My co-author, Pam Compart, and I have written the book, and it's called The Kid-Friendly ADHD and Autism Cookbook, The Ultimate Guide to the Gluten-Free, Casein-Free Diet. And this is the second edition just released for Autism Awareness Month, and it is chock full of information. It is not just for ADHD and autism. There are lots of individuals, children and adults, who have a lot of problems tolerating not just wheat and milk products, and glutens include wheat, oat, barley, rye, spelt, and kamut. Sometimes individuals aren't clear on what gluten is, and wheat is the most common one. And it is not uncommon for people to not handle glutens, especially wheat, and casein, which is milk protein, but also soy and eggs and corn and nuts. So there are a lot of foods that can be problematic for both children and adults. And this book has that information. It's chock full of wonderful family-friendly recipes. We have some special recipes for the younger age group, the toddlers and the infants, but we have mostly family-friendly recipes. They are delicious. And if you haven't had a delicious chocolate chip cookie, you've got to get this book. The chocolate chip cookie that's gluten-free, casein-free, is the best chocolate chip cookie you'll ever taste. Now, you might be wondering why I, as a nutritionist, would be having cookies in the book. And there's a good reason for it. When kids have to go off of these foods, they need another option. And they need some healthy options for gluten-free, casein-free cookies and breads. And what we do is we chock full those cookies with some vegetables, and the kids never even know it. We can make a muffin I call a pot pie that has pureed meats, vegetables, and fruits in it that is delicious, because some of the children have sensory issues and cannot eat very easily foods that are too crunchy or too hard. So we do have to use a lot of purees in the beginning, and we sneak the vegetables in. This book is especially helpful for the picky eater, any picky eater. And we've talked about the picky eater being due to exposure to processed foods, a lot of the white diet, which raises blood sugar, which depletes zinc, because zinc is part of the insulin molecule. So when you get a low zinc, you don't taste the same taste of the food. You don't taste that sweetness that's in the vegetables. They're bland, or they're actually offensive. In the autism spectrum, the low appetite, the picky appetite, the odd appetite is really due to severe zinc deprivation, and this has to do with malabsorption problems, toxic metals. It's much more complex. But we have many, many children walking around today who only eat the white diet, and they'll eat macaroni and cheese, they'll eat breads, they'll eat French fries and tater tots. They will not eat vegetables. Some of them even refuse fruits, and some of them even get down to refusing most proteins. So there's a lot of help in the book with specific guidelines. And also wanted to let you know that the Defeat Autism Now conference is in Atlanta. It's this month, the 17th to the 19th. It's for professionals and parents. It is one of the very few medical conferences that welcomes parents, and parents are a part of the Autism Research Institute board and part of the Defeat Autism Now effort. And interestingly enough, last year, the American Academy of Pediatrics was invited and asked to be invited to the Defeat Autism Now conference. And what's so exciting about this to me is that up until just a few years ago, the Academy has been extremely negative about the dietary and biomedical influences and the treatments, basically calling them quackery. And this is a complete turnaround. They have asked to join forces with other autism organizations as well as the Autism Research Institute and the Defeat Autism Now program toward preventing, identifying, and treating autism spectrum disorders. And they issued a bulletin last year. It's very exciting. Again, they ask their pediatricians to not be negative to parents who are going through the complementary alternative approaches, and to be supportive of those parents, and to learn themselves about the diets and about the nutritional approaches. So times are a-changing, and I'm very happy to see it. The book's available on Amazon.com. It's written by myself, Dana Lake, and Pamela Compart, MD, my co-author. It's an exciting book for this particular niche. And you can also go to the booksellers, including Barnes & Noble, and they are showcasing it this month. That's the Kid-Friendly ADHD and Autism Cookbook, The Ultimate Guide to the Gluten-Free, Casein-Free Diet. Now, let's talk a little bit about our poor trees and what's happening to them. There was a study by the U.S. Geological Survey, and they looked at trees in the western United States because they've been dying off at an increasing rate over the past few decades. So in documenting it, they looked at three regions, the Pacific Northwest, California, and the continental interior near the Rocky Mountains. And the culprit seems to be locally higher temperatures, which decrease the available water and boost the activity of a bark-damaging fungus. So it's warming, which decreases water and increases a bark-damaging fungus. So as a result, the trees on an average are much younger and smaller and less able to hold on to carbon. And we've talked about carbon in the past and our carbon footprint and the importance of trees and controlling carbon. Now, the annual death rate of trees per 1,000 trees in 1984 was 7.1, and in 2001, 11.4. And the number of trees in the study area, just to show you how many they looked at, was over 58,000 in 1984 and over 47,000 in 2001. So the calculated increase in annual number of deaths per 1,000 trees is 4. So the number of years for the tree mortality rate to double in the Pacific Northwest is 17 years, in California, 25 years, and the continental interior, 29 years. So that means we're going to have double the death rate starting in the Pacific Northwest in 17 years. So each year we're losing more and more trees, and that's frightening. And so that's our little green piece. We will mention some others on the show, and I just want to remind you that you're listening to The Essentials of Healthy Living on Progressive Talk AM 1260. I'm Dana Lake, your host for this hour. Please stay with us. We're going to be right back after this break. Hello, listeners. Welcome back to the Essentials of Healthy Living on Progressive Talk AM 1260, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda. I'm Dana Lake, your host for the next hour, and reminding you to tune in every Saturday, and next Saturday at 10 o'clock, Kevin Passaro, my co-host, will be hosting that show. We're alternating Saturdays. Let's talk a little bit about the little-known secrets about bleached flour and a little more information about the wheat berry. Now, everybody knows that white flour is not healthy, but most people don't know that when white flour is bleached, it can even be far worse for you. So it's generally understood now that when you refine food, it destroys nutrients, but I don't think most people know to what degree. And I'll just give you some of the top ones. I'm not going to cover every single nutrient. We don't have the time. But with refining, and when you make whole wheat bread, you are refining. And I reiterate this over and over. The grinding of the grain turns the grain into flour. And that flour is glycemic, sugar raising. It raises blood sugar, blood glucose significantly. The more you refine it, the more you grind it, the less nutrition, the less fiber. So when you keep a lot of fiber in the grain, or you add fiber via adding nuts and seeds or vegetables, so you're making a super muffin, what you get is a muffin of bread that's very, very dense. If it's fluffy, it's not healthy. So we are talking about all kinds of refining, and getting white flour is refining. I had to laugh because many of the white breads now have a little notice on it that says, from whole grain. Well, all flours are, all of the grain flours are from whole grain. So they're trying to convince a consumer that they're getting something better. So what do you lose when you refine? You lose half of the beneficial unsaturated fatty acids, virtually all of the vitamin E, 50% of the calcium, 70% of the phosphorus, 80% of the iron, 98% of the magnesium, and 50 to 80% of the B vitamins. It's huge. You really don't get the nutrition that would stay there if you used fermented and cooked grains, such as real cream of wheat, real oatmeal, real oat bran, muesli, buckwheat, made into the cereals, brown rice, wild basmati rice. These are the ways that we should eat the grains. They retain more of their nutrients and fiber. So let's talk about the journey of the wheat berry. And you can find more about this if you go on the Healthy Eating Politics site. It has an interesting article about this process. Now, most commercial wheat production is unfortunately a study in pesticide application. And it begins with the seeds being treated with fungicides. And then, once they become wheat, they're sprayed with hormones and pesticides. And even the bins in which the harvested wheat is stored have been coated with insecticides. So if bugs, after all that, if the bugs appear on the wheat in storage, they fumigate the grain. There's a lot of pesticide in there. And just as an aside, a reminder that when you go organic, these are not used. Organic farming has to do with avoiding the harmful pesticides, additives, and chemicals. Now, a whole grain of wheat, which is also called the wheat berry, is composed of three layers. The bran, and that has the insoluble fiber. Insoluble means you could stir bran forever in water, it will never dissolve. And then the germ and the endosperm. And the bran is the layer, of course, where you find the fiber, and it's like a hard outer shell of the kernel. The germ is the nutrient-rich embryo that will sprout into a new wheat plant. And the endosperm is the largest part of the grain. It's about 83%, and it makes up most of the kernel, and it's mostly starch. So I know you can guess what's left when you refine that wheat berry, and it's mostly starch. So white flour is from the endosperm only, whereas whole wheat flour combines all three parts of the wheat berry. So if you retain more of the wheat berry, you get more nutrition and more fiber. Now, the old-time mills used to grind the flour very slowly, but today's mills are designed for mass production, and they use high-temperature, high-speed steel rollers, and the result is that a lot of nutrients are destroyed by that heat, and the white flour is nearly all starch. And even much of today's commercially processed whole wheat flour has lost a fair amount of nutritional value. So we really look for organic and stone-ground whole wheat. Now, I always argue this point that once the wheat is ground into flour, it's not really whole. But what we're saying is when you retain more of what's in the wheat berry, it's more whole. Now, white flour contains a small fraction of the nutrients, as we've said, and it's also hit with another chemical insult. It's a chlorine gas bath called chlorine oxide, and this actually serves as a whitener as well as an aging agent. I guess you didn't know that grains needed to age. Flours used to be aged with thyme, and improving the gluten was the reason for doing it, and it improved the baking quality. They don't have thyme now, so they do it with chlorine to instantly produce similar qualities in the flour. And there is a disturbing lack of concern about adding another dose of chemicals to our foods. So this is just part of the process. Now, it has not been determined how many mills are bleaching flour with chlorine oxide, but we do know that the use of chlorides for bleaching flour is considered an industry standard. And the EPA defines a chlorine gas as a flour bleaching, aging, and oxidizing agent that is a powerful irritant, dangerous to inhale, and lethal. Other agents also used include oxides of nitrogen, nitrosyl, benzoyl peroxide, which is what you put on your face when you have acne, mixed with various chemical salts. So we've got a lot more in the breads than we really understood. So why bleaching flour makes flour even worse? It's been shown that alloxan is a byproduct of the flour bleaching process. And the process they use to make flour look so clean and white. They're not technically adding alloxan to the flour, although you will read this bit of misinformation on the internet. But they are doing chemical treatments to the grain that result in the formation of alloxan in the flour. So with so little food value already in a piece of white bread, now there's potentially a chemical poison lurking in there as well. And so what's wrong with alloxan? It's a product of the decomposition of uric acid. It is a poison that's used to produce diabetes in healthy experimental animals, primarily rats and mice, so that researchers can then study diabetes treatments in the lab. Alloxan causes diabetes because it spins up enormous amounts of free radicals in the pancreatic beta cells. Those are the cells that actually produce insulin. And as they get destroyed, then you get into diabetes. And this might be more of a connection to diabetes and white bread than the glycemic sugar-raising effect itself. There is no other commercial application for alloxan. It is used exclusively in the medical research industry because it is so highly toxic. So right now, how much is too much? They're not quite sure. And there are studies of alloxan in rats and humans, and it does not look good. Scientists have long known that alloxan produces selective destruction of the beta cells, as we just said, and that causes hyperglycemia and ketoacidosis in lab animals. It's structurally similar to glucose. Alloxan is similar to glucose, which might explain why the pancreatic cells selectively take it up. So here again, we have more of a connection of something else that happens to white bread in this process of bleaching that can be glycemic or raise blood sugar. So it's important to go, number one, if you're going to use white flour, that's not the best to use. It should be unbleached. But what you want is stone ground, whole grain flour, and fewer words in there you can't pronounce or spell. Look at the label. There's a big move right now. Labels are starting to advertise only three, only five ingredients. They're moving away from so many additives because they know you as wise consumers have been taught to read the label. And when you can't pronounce the words, most likely they're chemicals, that should contain words you understand. Wheat, salt, etc. So this is Dana Lake reminding you, if you're going to use the grains, use them in their whole cooked form. If you're going to use breads that are flours, refined flours, and you're going to go toward the whiter breads, make sure it says unbleached. And just remind yourself that bleached is the worst. Unbleached doesn't have much nutrition. The more the natural flour, the wheat, and the fiber or additives that are healthy, like almonds, nuts, and seeds, the more of those, the healthier the bread. We're going to be back after this brief break. I just want to remind you, you're listening to The Essentials of Healthy Living on Progressive Talk AM 1260, brought to you by the Village Green Apothecary. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Hello, listeners. Welcome back to The Essentials of Healthy Living, sponsored by Village Green Apothecary. I'm Dana Lake, your host for the hour, and we've been talking about some interesting news, and we're going to continue to use what I call news you can use. We're going to talk about alcohol, eyesight, stroke, falls, trans fatty acids. I usually like to bring that up because I don't like trans fatty acids. And we'll talk about the prostate, go into some real detail, trying to cover some information that applies to all ages and stages. Now, some bad news on alcohol. You hear that it protects the heart, but you don't want to take something that protects one part of your body and damages another part. And there's a reason that the American Heart Association is not recommending alcohol for heart disease and not recommending wine for heart disease. A recent finding, and they studied 9,655 men and women, and they were followed for 17 years. So this is a really comprehensive study. Those who drank 1 to 9 alcoholic drinks, wine, beer, and or hard liquor weekly, and that's a little more than one a day, had half the risk for cardiovascular diseases, though those who drank more or less than that amount. Now, there's more to this. The finding was true only in adults who engaged in unhealthy behaviors such as smoking and or eating a poor diet. Alcohol did not have the heart protective effect in non-smokers who ate fruits and or vegetables daily and exercised vigorously for several hours weekly. The best protection for your heart is a healthy lifestyle. So we get a lot of confusing information. The other information in these studies have shown that women who consume one alcoholic drink a day are increasing their risk for breast cancer 10%. At 2 or more drinks a day, the risk for breast cancer is 40%. and men increase their risk for prostate cancer when they consume more than one drink a day. So it's really important to pay attention to this. Now, what about saving your eyesight? This is interesting. We know that we try to protect our eyes with sunglasses and how important it is. But in a study of 4,400 adults, we found some very interesting things. Those with the highest levels of sun exposure and the lowest blood levels of antioxidants, especially zeaxanthin, vitamin C, and vitamin E, were four times more likely to have advanced age-related macular degeneration, which is known as AMD, than those with less sun exposure and high antioxidant levels. Now, we get into this conundrum that you need sun exposure to get vitamin D, but you need to protect your eyes because too much sun exposure on the eyes releases free radicals. And if you don't have enough vitamin E and vitamin C and zeaxanthin, if you're not eating your fruits and vegetables that are orange, red, yellow, and color, then you're not getting enough of these antioxidants. Now, if you have good antioxidant protection, you get protection from the AMD, age-related macular degeneration. So eat at least 5 servings daily of antioxidant-rich fruits and vegetables, such as apples, oranges, leafy greens, and as I said, the orange, yellow, red vegetables and fruits. And when you're outdoors, wear sunglasses and a wide-brimmed hat. But then on the other hand, we tell you, get a little bit of sun exposure. Now, if you've got significant skin problems from skin cancers and avoid it, that's okay, but you can't avoid vitamin D. And when you're in that sun for 30 minutes, you get about 10,000 international units of vitamin D made in your body. And it will not be made if the sun is not high in the sky. And you're not going to get much vitamin D conversion until May through September in the East Coast. So it varies as to where you are and sun exposure. And if your skin is light, you will make vitamin D more quickly. If your skin is darker, you will need to be exposed for a longer period of time. And what does vitamin D prevent? It prevents cancer of the skin, breast, prostate, lung, and colon. And I put skin first because we've been avoiding the sun to protect against skin cancer, but skin cancers increase if we don't have enough vitamin D. Vitamin D also protects bones, it affects immunity, and it affects mood. Most people are not aware of this. In child development, it's critical. And vitamin D deficiency is one of the more common deficiencies we see in children with learning disabilities, learning delays, and autism spectrum. We're testing it, and the new findings out of a consensus at NIH, and the Institute of Medicine is looking at this right now to reestablish the guidelines. The old toxic levels are no longer toxic, and the old standards are no longer applicable. The recommendations have doubled and tripled in vitamin D, and it's important to get a simple test called a 25-hydroxyvitamin D. That's 25-hydroxyvitamin D. And that level for optimum function should be 60 to 80 nanograms per ml. All you have to remember is 60 to 80. The old standard had the range at 20 to 100, and then it went 40 to 100. So it's now moved up. We want optimum. We don't want what's average because vitamin D deficiency is a mini epidemic. And when you take vitamin D, you must avoid D2. And that is the prescription form where the doctor prescribes 50,000 international units. It's a little green pill. That is D2. It occurs naturally in plants, but it is poorly utilized by humans. It may not even be helpful to bone. It is not considered appropriate for human supplementation. It is D3, and this is how you remember it. Vitamin D2 is ergocalciferol, E for error, ergocalciferol. Vitamin D3 is cholecalciferol, which is correct, the good form. So D2 is the wrong form, error, ergo calciferol, and D3 is the good form, cholecalciferol, correct. So that's what you need to know about vitamin D. Now let's move on to men and stroke risk. And this is kind of interesting. When 296 men with high blood pressure, which is a stroke risk factor, we all know that, tried to guess their stroke risk, 78% of them significantly underestimated it. Now, many men and likely women, this study was done on men, but likely women as well, consider themselves less likely than their peers to develop health problems, especially medical conditions linked to risk factors that can be controlled, such as smoking and excess weight. And the greatest causes of death, the preventable causes, are overweight, lack of exercise, and poor diet, and smoking. These are very easy things to get rid of. These aren't our genes. This is what we do to ourselves. So I think what it is that we think it's going to happen to everybody else, and it's not going to happen to us. And even those who do well, you know, are not, you can't guarantee you're not going to have a problem. You're going to die from something. But you can improve your health and feel better every day. And that's the whole point, to have a better quality of life every day. Not to live miserably and die, but to live healthfully, happily, and die naturally and hopefully in your sleep. I wanted to talk a little bit about the dangers of falls. And we don't often think about why people are falling. And if we understand more why people fall, we can have prevention. And this can happen to even young people. Loss of balance is significant. Now, why do people lose balance? Those with low blood pressure, those with low adrenals, are going to get dizzy if they stand up quickly. And who's more likely to have that? The elderly. But we also see it in young people. Now, what else can contribute to falls? Muscle weakness. So if you have weak muscles in the feet, the ankles, the knees, and the hips, you're not going to catch yourself as easily. You're going to fall more easily. Exercise helps. Impaired nerve function, and this happens if you've had some chemotherapy, diabetes, or if you just don't have good nutrition, and vitamin B12 deficiency is absolutely a cause of these impaired nerve functions and is absolutely an excellent treatment, especially B12 injections given on a regular basis. Thinning bones. If your bone mass declines, and this declines with age, then what happens is osteoporosis develops and the hip can get weak. And sometimes it's the weak hip that causes the fall, not the fall that causes the hip to break. So it's very important to have exercise, and walking is extremely helpful to the hip. When your heel hits the ground, that heel strike is helpful. Low vitamin D levels. This is extremely important. And low vitamin D levels, as I said, are important to bone health. It's more important than calcium. It's more important than magnesium. So the most important to bone is vitamin D. The next important to bone is magnesium. I'm going to continue this discussion on falls and then talk about prostate problems in the final segment. Please stay with us, listeners. This is Dana Lake with the Essentials of Healthy Living, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Hello, welcome back to the Essentials of Healthy Living, sponsored by Village Green. I'm Dana Lake, your host for the hour, reminding you that we're here every Saturday morning. My co-host, Kevin Passaro, and I will be alternating shows. And we've been talking about nutrition news you can use, talked a little bit about tree death and the loss of trees because of climate warming. And we've been talking about falls and what causes them. And this applies not just to the elderly, but to younger people as well. And we talked about loss of balance, which is very common in the elderly, but we have a lot of young people that have it. If blood pressure is too low, you get dizzy upon standing. It makes you at greater risk for a fall, as does muscle weakness and any kind of impaired nerve function, especially in the feet. You can't tell your foot placement as well, and B12 deficiency will classically cause these paresthesias, loss of sensation or tingling sensation in the feet, and you might not even be able to feel when you step on something sharp because of the nerve damage. And thin bones, we know that makes it harder to keep balance. It changes posture, and balance becomes more precarious. So small fractures of the vertebrae caused by osteoporosis accentuate the forward shift of the body. And you, as you watch older people walk, you see them leaning more forward because of the changes in bone. We talked about the importance of vitamin D to bone health and preventing fractures. You need to get that test done. And what about vision and hearing loss? That has a lot to do with falls. And vision is obvious. If you can't see clearly, you may miss a step. In the dark, especially, many people as they age have poor night vision. Night vision depends on vitamin A, and night vision problems is specifically a vitamin A deficiency, and it does tend to increase as we get older. And if we've got nearsightedness or farsightedness, we need to have that corrected. But a reminder, when you get your vision corrected and you get new glasses, be very careful. Many people experience stumbling and falling after having changes in their glasses because they haven't adjusted. Now, even hearing loss may be linked to increased falls, possibly because some hearing problems reflect damage to the eighth cranial nerve, which also controls the inner ear system and maintains balance. So that comes back to balance again. Dangerous medications. If you're on sedatives, you're certainly going to have problems. And if you're on medications to lower blood pressure, and they're too effective, when you stand up quickly, you are going to get weakness and lightheadedness, and that can certainly lead to a fall. If this is an issue, stand up more slowly. And you see elderly people do this naturally. They have aches and pains, and it's easier for them to stand slowly. But if you're having to stand slowly and getting weak when you stand up quickly and you're on a blood pressure medication, you need to call your physician and have that medication reviewed. It may be that you don't need as much. And we find this in our nutrition treatments. Low magnesium and low potassium and sometimes low calcium are more common causes of high blood pressure than is low sodium. And that's been studied a long time. And magnesium deficiency is very common. It's in the greens and beans and nuts and seeds. It's easily depleted. And what we find out is that when we replace magnesium, the person who has high blood pressure may find their blood pressure stays too low because the magnesium is correcting the underlying cause and the medication is lowering it. Don't change your medications yourself. Call your physician. And there are also some antihistamines that have sedating effects. So if you're on one that has a sedating effect, and you can read the label to find that out, you may want to not use it because it can affect your balance. And sleep problems, lack of sleep, it makes it hard to focus. People don't do well, and especially if they happen to be using medications to induce sleep, that changes alertness and, again, dulls senses, increases risk of fall. There might be an underlying illness, too, that could cause it. pneumonia, urinary tract infections, heart attacks, falls can be associated. So we often don't know what causes the fall, but at least the things we know we can change. Trans fats. I talk about this a lot. Trans fatty acids are mutant fatty acids. They are supersaturated. They never should have been promoted. It has always been understood, at least for the last 45 years, that they are mutant plastic fatty acids. They are more saturated than saturated fats. Lard is far healthier for you than trans fats, and the trans fats were developed to replace butter and to replace lard. And butter and lard are not harmful for you. In fact, I have the data that shows from 1909 until the current day, we have decreased significantly butter intake, decreased very significantly lard intake, decreased from over one egg a day to about an egg every other day in our culture. And heart disease went up when those went down. And you are told that heart disease is linked to lard and butter, saturated fats, and eggs, and it's not. And you're starting to hear the scientific truth now and the changes. What increased significantly? It began in the 30s is trans fatty acids. So we really didn't have hydrogenated oils much before the 30s. And it took off. And as trans has gone up, all of our chronic illnesses have gone up. So you want to avoid it. Now, trans-free isn't a guarantee because they can still put trans fatty acids at minimal amounts in that margarine or that butter or that product. And stay away from things that have esterified fatty acids. That may be the next trans fatty acid. We don't know. They aren't helpful and they could be hurtful. Use butter. Just use butter. It's natural. The body knows it. And cook with lard. I bet you never thought you'd hear this. But we now know that trans fats are definitely linked to breast cancer. They've always been linked to heart disease. They get into the brain. They affect brain development. And now we find that they're linked to breast cancer. And this was a study on 19,000 women. And those with the highest blood levels of trans fatty acids were twice as likely to develop breast cancer. And this was during a 7-year period. And it was compared to those that had the lowest levels. So it was significant. So to lower your risk, absolutely avoid trans fatty acids. They have no place in human health. They have no benefit. Now, let's jump over to the men. We've talked about the ladies. Let's talk about the men. Prostate troubles. And as men age, they definitely start to suffer prostate problems and enlargement. But it's starting to occur at earlier and earlier ages. And there are a lot of nutritionally related issues. And about 1 in 10 men will be diagnosed with chronic prostatitis, pain and swelling of the prostate, due to inflammation that results from unknown causes or an infection. And you get urinary urgency, urinary frequency, and it can also lead to symptoms that do not typically occur with an enlarged prostate. So there are lots of other problems that can occur. And what can you do about it? There are medications, but what can you do ahead of time? We advocate some wonderful supplements, saw palmetto, absolutely helpful, reduces the damaging testosterone. Quercetin, the antioxidant, anti-inflammatory, is found in red wine. Don't overdo that. Onions and green tea. And you can reduce inflammation. I love Quercetin Plus by Pathways of Village Green. It is very protective for breast cancer and for prostate cancer. Omega-3 fatty acids, extremely important. Relaxation, trigger point therapy, acupuncture, and biofeedback. We always throw those in. B vitamins are important to the prostate. Vitamin C, magnesium. So when you add those up, you get a nice protection. And there's no reason that men can't prevent prostate problems. And the mineral that's going to help you do that is zinc. Zinc is important to the prostate. And most of the men's vitamins out there, and you can go to Village Green and they will help you with the right supplements for men, women, teenagers, pregnant women, whatever your age, stage, or gender. This is Dana Lake thanking you for listening to us and reminding you to go online with MyVillageGreen.com. Remember to take care of yourself and at least one other person and go green. This is Dana Lake and Village Green wishing each and every one of you good health and a great day.